Testing, testing, 1, 2. This is Jason Carello pretending that he's had his first coffee of the day.
And I am Chris Withers. I am also uncaffeinated, but I will struggle through.
For all the loud whinging, whining, and claims of never spending a dollar on NHL hockey again, the fans have done exactly what Gary Bettman and his legions of drones knew they would. They've come back slobbering and drooling all over the prospect of watching Sidney Crosby. Basically, the NHL had a record opening week in 2013. Congratulations. The greatest fans in the world are
sycophants.
Exactly the stiffs we thought they were.
Sycophants.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. I hope it's a good time, a good day, a good life. This is Jason Carello. I'm here with Pucked in the Head. My good friend Chris Withers is sitting opposite me.
Jason, it is good to be here once more.
I have already disclosed there's been no coffee today. Know about you, but I am very cranky.
I'm not. I'm surprisingly good-tempered, which has not been the case recently. As you alluded to in the opening, the fans of the National Hockey League have come flocking back in most markets, and it pisses me off.
I have to say, I'm glad to see it on TV. I'm glad to see people talking about the hockey on Twitter instead of battles and labor disputes and other bullshit.
Sure. But don't you think this is just the precursor to lockout 2020?
Yes.
Now, I have to say, my enthusiasm for the game has been tempered quite a bit by the lockout. I have watched 2 Canucks games in their entirety. I turned off the Ducks game after one period when it was still tied because I just couldn't do it. I just didn't want to sit there and give my attention right back to the NHL. I don't know that your glossy outlook applies to all markets, though. Phoenix couldn't even manage to spin their attendance into double digits. There was no way that they could get their attendance number over 8,500. It was a weeknight.
So, I mean, this is not news in Phoenix. I mean, weeknight games have always been a low turnout. We've made fun of it before on the podcast.
A low turnout, yes. But usually, teams are able to give away tickets. They're able to count asses that aren't in seats in some way.
And this is something during the lockout, we talked about this with the Abbotsford Heat, for example, had, you know, ghosts in the building.
Yeah.
But they were counting, I guess, people dressed up as blue seats.
Well, people who had bought season tickets and didn't show up, etc.
Or tickets that were given away like water at community events,
yeah,
or things like that. I mean, they're easily doubling their numbers because they were claiming there were 2,000 people in the crowd, and I saw maybe 700.
The Canucks are still pumping their sellout streak, but there are quite a number of seats that were just released on opening day. Reports from the building say there were quite a number of empty seats throughout Rogers Arena. So I'll ask you, Jason, is the game back?
When I said record weekend, I was more referring to, for example, numbers that were reported for NBC's broadcast,
mm-hmm,
which were the biggest numbers they've had for any game since 2002.
Really?
Yes.
And who was playing?
I'm sorry. I don't know. It might have been Philly and Pittsburgh.
Because I remember turning on briefly the LA-Chicago game, which I think was on NBC, and it was nothing to write home about. The game, yeah. I mean, it was okay, but Chicago just ran away with it.
The first 5 games of this season are essentially preseason games.
Yeah.
For their quality.
Yeah.
Right? You're not seeing guys at the top of their game. You've got a couple of people who maybe are in mid-season form, as played in Europe, whatever, but they're fast starters. But teams are loose. Passes are not tape to tape. I mean, you've got defensive breakdowns. Jeff Merrick on Merrick versus Wyshynski is arguing that this actually makes for a more entertaining game because you've got mistakes.
Yeah.
Right? You've got odd man rushes all over the place. the Edmonton-Vancouver game, Edmonton came in waves, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 3-on-1. And the only thing that kept the Canucks in that game and got them a point was Roberto Luongo.
Yeah. And that's something that I've actually commented on, the couple of German league games that that I've watched. The goalies are, their puck control is just terrible.
And the rebounds.
And so you don't, yeah, you get the rebounds. You don't get the puck being frozen every time it's directed on net. You're getting, you know, shot after shot, teams break out. It's great. It's not going to last.
Was Zach Cassian last night against the Flames, was he playing Usildor Flames? Is that why he got three cracks at that puck to put it in?
He had a really good game.
I admit, I watched the first two games in their entirety. The third game, I missed because I was out taking pictures. Rec League game, which was loads of fun. I want to talk about mistakes, breakdowns, and rebounds. But it was a lot of fun. Hog Shack, the restaurant, not trying to hijack the place. It is one of the home bases of the Canucks hockey blog. Went out and took some pictures of one of their Rec League games last night. And debating whether or not I will post it as an actual podcast episode after this one.
Hmm. All right. Well, I am not back yet. And I just wanted to say that.
All right. Fair enough. A couple of quick fire topics. Do you want to go first or second?
I will go second.
First up, I would like to say that one of my pleasant surprises of this year so far has been Monsieur Marty Brodeur. You might ask yourself, why is it a surprise? This is a Hall of Fame lock. On his career, he's the all-time wins leader, all-time shutout leader. He's got multiple Stanley Cups. And
you know what's funny is I was just thinking all of those things.
Is that sarcasm?
No.
And I mean, this is a guy that you expect when he goes 2-0 to start a season, people would go, did Brodeur win again? No, this guy, let me tell you, he starts seasons poorly. Okay. Last year, he was 0-2 to start the season. In fact, he was 0-3 to start the season. He let up 9 goals in 7 periods. Not 7 games, 7 periods of hockey to start the season. He sucked until Christmas, and he turned it around, and of course ended up leading them to the Stanley Cup final, all on his lonesome. 2 years ago, he started the season 5 wins, 18 losses.
Now, is this Brodeur? Because the Devils haven't exactly been lighting
this
it up.
This is Martin Brodeur. This is not the Devils.
No, no, no.
This is Martin Brodeur. He stunk. He was horrible. People were calling for him to retire. Even in New Jersey, people were saying, Marty, hang him up.
But he's back.
On New Year's Day 2 years ago, he let in 3 goals on 7 shots and was yanked on a New Year's Day NBC game.
Hmm.
3 years ago, let in 8 goals against in 2 losses to start the season. 5 years ago, he was 0-3 to start the season. He stinks in the early season. He's a late season performer. And I argue that Marty Brodeur should ask for a lockout every year because in January, he's a god. And he plays that way until the end of the year and into the playoffs. And October to December is just a waste of time for Martin Brodeur.
Why is that, do you think? Does he get distracted by Halloween and...
Oh, Halloween candy, Thanksgiving in 2 countries.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, he likes his food.
Likes his food. And then as soon as Christmas dinner is over...
Ridiculous, but it's funny.
It is funny.
I don't know if I'll find a clip of that awful pizza commercial with him and Luke Robitaille.
It is good to see a legend not going out on the downslope of his career. I mean, if he can sustain this over the course of a season, it would be good to see. Too many times you see guys hanging on long past their effective hockey players. Chris Kelios comes to mind.
Kelios?
What was he, 60 when he hung him up finally?
Why do you call him Kelios? There's an H in there. The H is pronounced.
I am not having this debate with you again.
The H is pronounced. No one has ever called him Kelios, ever, except
for
true. You. Except for you.
That is absolutely not
you
true.
You are the only person on the face of the planet who calls him Chris Kelios. It drives me bonkers.
I'm going to say it again, Kelios.
I have not had my coffee yet, you bastard. His name is Chelios. They call him Chelly. Your point being?
I made my point. You weren't listening.
You inaccurate or you forgot freak.
You forgot my point. That episode of Blind White Rage that you just had. Folks, Jason Carilla just almost came over the microphone at me.
Okay, so yeah, I agree with you. He's 40 years old. Talking about Fountain of Youth, Teemu Selanne, 4 points in his first game. Again, mind you, the Canucks stunk the place out defensively, but 4 points in his first game. The faceoff win that he had so that Sheldon Surrey could put a rocket past Corey Schneider was a thing of beauty. Like, it's not just the little finesse things that Teemu is doing. He's doing the dirty things well. Like, those faceoff wins are not easy to do.
No. And you know what? We did see this last lockout. In fact, I think Teemu Selanne was a beneficiary of that lockout as well. He used it to get healthy, get his career back on track when a lot of people thought he was going to retire.
True enough. And I think he's been on like 1 year contracts ever since.
Pretty much. Yeah. You know, I think this just goes to show that the 82 game schedule that the NHL plays, depending on how far you go in the playoffs, as little as 2 or 3 months off, is just too much, even for elite athletes. These athletes have the time to come back and train, get themselves prepared properly. You really do see the best out of the older guys.
I will add one addendum to your comment. Is this is because it's a contact sport.
Yeah.
Like, and full contact. Like, I know there is some contact in basketball, but there's no body checking in basketball.
No.
Right? And I know that they need upper body strength in order to get inside and keep position and all that. But they're not hitting each other full speed against a fucking wall.
Mm-hmm.
Doing things like getting your nose broken, having it put back into place and not missing a shift.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that kind of thing in basketball very often, unless it's Steve Nash.
Unless it's Canadian Steve Nash, guy. Yeah. Good for Marty Brodeur. And maybe it's time for the NHL to take a look at the NFL and how short their season is and maybe draw some conclusions.
Well, to be fair, the NFL also has 70,000 people in the building, and there are people who are on 10-year waiting lists to get to games.
Absolutely, but they only play 8 home dates in the NFL.
Right.
Right. The NHL currently, on a full season, plays 41. There is leeway. There is room to come down from the 82-game schedule.
I am completely with you there. I think like a 60-game schedule, I think, would be really good. We'd see better hockey.
Yep.
And I think we'd see fewer injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just statistically, it makes sense. We would see fewer injuries. But we'd also see fewer guys who run out of gas down the stretch. Yeah, I think we'd see better hockey overall.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that they would definitely have a lockout over.
Yes, definitely. Speaking of injuries.
Yes.
In the Edmonton-Vancouver game a few nights back.
Right. Edmonton 3-2 winners in a shootout.
In a shootout. After the Oilers had come back to tie the game at 2.
Yes.
The very next shift, we saw that thing that you and I both hate, the staged fight.
Yes.
Zach Cassian, Ben Eager, dropped the mitts for absolutely no reason. Cassian concussed Ben Eager. Now, the loss of Ben Eager to the National Hockey League is not great, but that could just as easily have gone the other way, and a very young, promising hockey player in Zach Cassian could have been concussed, and who knows how long that injury could have lingered. After the last lockout, the NHL made a whole ton of rule changes to make the game exciting. They did no such thing this year, and I think that was an extremely large lost opportunity. I think that the elimination of staged fights would have been, this would have been a good time to force it through.
I could not agree with you more, unless I actually walked over there and stepped inside your skin like Luke into a tauntaun.
That didn't end well for the tauntaun.
It did not end well for the tauntaun, and so I won't do that to you, sir.
All right.
Basically, you are echoing sentiments. I agree. I'll just say that. And no more geeky references. But the big problem here was the fact that they wanted to play, where last time when they locked out. The season was lost. They'd already lost the season. It was canceled. So they had February, March, April, May, June, plus the off season to not only hammer out the financial thing, but hammer out the rules. Here, they didn't have that. They started getting towards the financial thing they wanted to put together. They only had a week before things were ratified.
That is true.
To now go in and hammer out rule changes would have been counterproductive.
I guess so, yeah.
They just wanted to play. They did bring in a couple of small rule changes, by the way.
They did. Yeah, that was those were approved, I think, before the lockout. It's been an ongoing battle. Gary Bettman has been somewhat opposed to fighting, but has also been publicly unwilling to take on that battle. What do you think that the league should do with fighting, given that it's not going to ban it outright anytime soon?
It's a tough one. As you know, I am not a fan of the fisticuffs in general. I can think of very few situations where I actually approve of a fist hitting a face, Gary Bettman notwithstanding. The league has a huge public relations nightmare on its hands with regards to fighting, no matter which direction it turns. If it tries to ban certain types of fights, I mean, it's a lot like trying to ban certain types of guns in America. You've got these kind of knee-jerk reaction hillbillies at heart that are going to complain that you're stealing our rights and we have the right to bear arms and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say no staged fights and you put that call in the hands of the referee, the judgment call, was it staged or not?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to have a refereeing problem and people are going to blame the officiating. If it's called a staged fight, then the penalty has got to be different from a regular fight.
Yeah, and I don't know that I would make the referees make that call. They've got enough on their plate.
So would it be a suspendable offense?
Yeah, I think that that would be the only way to go about it, really.
Personally, I think they should institute a rule similar to what the CHL has done. And I think they're watching the CHL pretty closely, where they're counting the number of fighting majors that
right.
a player gets.
Yeah, this is just in the OHL, I think, isn't
it? Is it only the OHL?
I think so, yeah.
Over a certain number of fights in a given season, a player gets an automatic one-game suspension.
Yeah.
Then if they go over another amount, they get an automatic three-game suspension. I like that. I think that's good.
Yeah. You're not worth using one of my 10 on.
Yeah. I've got 10 freebies, basically.
Yeah.
You've got guys who, you know, they'll go out and fight the same dude three times in one game.
Yeah. Well done, Jason. I like that solution.
You like that one?
Gary Bettman, make it so.
Gary, I would waste one of my 10 freebies on you, by the way. Just so you know. Now, I have a question for you. Now, I'm not a fighter, as you know.
I am?
No. I'm not saying that. But you're a bit, you know, thicker through the torso than I am.
Oh.
You know? I'm not
indeed.
I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying, you know, like you've got some heft to you. You got
thicker through the torso. All right, let's just stick with that.
You've got some muscle on you, right?
No, I don't actually, but do go on.
You have the illusion of muscle on you.
All right, this is getting a little awkward now.
It is a little strange, isn't it? Would there be anything more embarrassing for a hockey fan than to be jerseyed and beat up by Gary Bettman? Just pick a fan, pick anybody at all, and if you saw Gary Bettman reach over, jersey the guy, and just start wailing away and make the guy turtle, if you had to turtle for Gary Bettman, is there anything more embarrassing for a hockey fan than that?
No, I don't think.
Even cheering for the Toronto Maple Leafs is not that embarrassing.
I can't come up with anything. You know, I'm thinking about some of those on-ice contests and whether you could possibly embarrass yourself more in one of those, but...
Oh, like the slingshot bowling and the mascot races and stuff like that?
You know, shoot the puck from center and, I don't know, you completely whiff on the puck, knock it 3 inches and...
No, I think getting beat up by Gary Bettman would still be...
Even with 17,000... Does the amount of people that see you have any relevance here?
Well, okay, first of all, number of people.
Number.
Not amount of people. Number of people. Thank you. Number.
You know, if you want to do a grammar podcast, I won't join you, but you're welcome to start one.
Number. Thank you. No, I don't think the number of people matters at all. Because if you got jerseyed and beat up by Gary Bettman, it would be all over YouTube anyway. Even if no one caught it on camera, okay. It would be immediately reenacted.
If the jerseying and the beating up happens in a vacuum, if you go into Gary Bettman's office, shut the door with the intent to beat the crap out of him, and he beats the crap out of you, is that more or less embarrassing than whiffing on the center ice shot front of 19,000 people?
If the sound of fist hitting face was emanating from Gary Bettman's office, I imagine that there would be 3 or 4 smartphones pointed at the door to see who came out bloodied and bruised. So if you walked out of there sheepishly with your shirt on backwards, it would go public pretty quickly.
All right.
Well, that is it for our shame on you, NHL fans, for coming back to the game. Just because you did that, we talked about the NHL the whole time. I hope you're happy. I hope you can live with yourselves, you sheep.
That was the worst sheep ever. I'm not going to do it.
After you.
I'm not going to embarrass myself in that fashion.
After me, I guess, because I did it first already. Please.
I am not going to embarrass myself in that fashion.
Fine. I will go back to our first episode wherein you call Andrew Alberts a goat and do that very sound.
I did do that, didn't I?
And rather emphatically as well.
That was the second worst bah ever. All right. We'll see you again soon, Jason. It's been fun. Let me speak plain. I've got to sit and wait for my mouth to catch up to my brain. Time is spinning clockwise down the drain. Come back to me soon, because I'll soon be out of range. I'm feeling able as Cain. I only take these for pain. Broke out of rehab just like Ahab in that book by Mark Twain. Don't you worry, see you back here again. I don't mean to complain, but it's familiar terrain. I'm firing melon balls from cannons on the Spanish Main, but I'm alright. It's just a red wine stain. It's all too normal now, where once it seemed so strange. Time for time for a change.
I absolutely hate Andrew Alberts. This guy is the most useless excuse for a defenseman that the Canucks have had since Dana Murzyn.
And now you hate, mind you, Andrew Alberts.
Andrew Alberts has been a goat so often that they need somebody on the bench right now in Vancouver to translate. You can edit that out and put in a goat sound if you so desire.